eyes. It's not the sun that woke me up, though. It was the sound of Holder's voice.
Look, you have no idea what she's been through the past 2 days, Holder says.
He's trying to speak softly, either in an attempt not to wake me, or in an attempt for me not to hear his conversation. I don't hear anyone speak in return, so he must be on the phone. Who the hell is he talking to, though?
I understand your need to defend her. Believe me, I do. But you both need to know that she's not walking inside that house alone.
There's a long pause before he sighs heavily into the phone.
I need to make sure she eats something, so give us some time.
Yes, I promise.
I'm waking her up as soon as I hang up. We'll leave within the hour.
He doesn't say goodbye, but I hear the phone drop onto the table. Within seconds, the bed dips and he's sliding an arm around me.
Wake up, babe, he says into my ear.
I don't move.
I am awake, I say from underneath the covers.
I feel his head press into my shoulder.
So you heard that?
He asks, his voice low.
Who was it?
He shifts on the bed and pulls the covers off of my head.
Jack.
He claims Karen confessed everything to him last night. He's worried about her.
He needs you to talk to her.
My heart stops mid-beat.
She confessed?
I ask warily, sitting up in the bed. He nods.
We didn't go into details, but he seems to know what's going on. I did tell him about your father, though, only because Karen wanted to know if you saw him. When I woke up today, it was on the news. They ruled it a suicide based on the fact that he called it in himself. They aren't even opening it for investigation.
He holds my hand and caresses it with his thumb.
Sky, Jack sounds desperate for you to come back. I think he's right. We need to go back and finish this. You won't be alone. I'll be there, and Jack will be there. And from the sound of it, Karen is cooperating. I know it's hard, but we don't have a choice.
He's talking to me like I need to be convinced, when really I'm ready. I need to see her face to face in order to get the last of my questions answered. I throw the covers off of me completely and scoot off the bed, then stand up and stretch. I need to brush my teeth and change first, then we can go. I walk to the bathroom and don't turn around, but I can feel the pride rolling off of him. He's proud of me. Holder hands me his cell phone once we're on the road.
Here, Brecken and Six are both worried about you. Karen got their numbers out of your cell phone and has been calling them all weekend trying to find you.
Did you talk to either of them?
He nods. I spoke with Brecken this morning, right before Jack called. I told him you and your mother got into a fight and you just wanted to get away for a few days. He's fine with that explanation.
What about Six?
He glances at me and gives me a half smile. Six, you might need to contact. I've been talking to her through email. I tried to appease her with the same story I told Brecken, but she wasn't buying it. She said you and Karen don't fight, and I need to tell her the truth before she flies back to Texas and kicks my ass.
I wince, knowing Six must be worried sick about me. I haven't texted her in days, so I decide to put off calling Brecken and shoot Six an email instead.
How do you email someone? I ask.
Holder laughs and takes his phone, pressing a few buttons. He hands it back to me and points to the screen.
Just type what you need to say in there, then hand it back to me and I'll send it.
I type out a short email, telling her that I found out a few things about my past and I needed to get away for a few days. I assure her that I'll call her to explain everything in the next few days, but I'm really not sure that I'll actually tell her the truth. At this point, I'm not sure I want anyone to know about my situation, not until I have all the answers.
Holder sends the email, then takes my hand and laces his fingers through mine. I focus my gaze out the window and stare up at the sky. "You hungry?" he asks after driving in complete silence for over an hour. I shake my head. I'm too nervous to eat anything, knowing I'm about to face Karen. I'm too nervous to even hold a normal conversation. I'm too nervous to do anything but stare out the window and wonder where I'll be when I wake up tomorrow. "You need to eat, babe. You've barely eaten anything in 3 days, and with your tendency to pass out, I don't think food would be a bad idea right now." He won't give up until I eat, so I just relent. "Fine," I mumble. He ends up choosing a roadside Mexican restaurant after I fail to make a choice as to where to eat. I order something off the lunch menu just to appease him. I more than likely won't be able to eat anything. "You want to play Dinner Quest?" he says, dipping a tortilla chip into his salsa. I shrug. I really don't want to face what I'll be doing in 5 hours, so maybe this will help get my mind off of things. I guess. On one condition, though. I don't want to talk about anything that has anything to do with the first few years of my life, the last 3 days, or the next 24 hours. He smiles, seemingly relieved. Maybe he doesn't want to think about any of it either. "Ladies first," he says. "Then put down that chip," I say, eyeing the food he's about to put in his mouth. His eyes drop to the chip, and he frowns playfully. "Make it a quick question, then, because I'm starving." I take advantage of my turn by downing a drink of my soda, then taking a bite of the chip that I just took out of his hands. "Why do you love running so much?" I ask. "I'm not sure," he says, sinking back into his seat. "I started running when I was 13. It started out as a way to get away from Les and her annoying friends. Sometimes I would just need out of the house. The squealing and cackling of 13-year-old girls can be extremely painful. I like the silence that came with running. If you haven't noticed, I'm sort of a thinker, so it helps me to clear my head." I laugh. "I've noticed," I say. "Have you always been like that?" He grins and shakes his head. "That's two questions. My turn." He takes the chip out of my hand that I was about to eat, and he pops it into his mouth, then takes a drink of his soda. "Why didn't you ever show up for track tryouts?" I cock my eyebrow and laugh. "That's an odd question to ask now. That was 2 months ago." He shakes his head and points a chip at me. No judging when it comes to my choice in questions. "Fine," I laugh. "I don't know, really. School just wasn't what I thought it would be. I didn't expect the other girls to be so mean. None of them even spoke to me unless it was to inform me of what a slut I was. Brecken was the only person in that whole school who made any effort." "That's not true," Holder says. "You're forgetting about Shayla." I laugh. "You mean Shayna?" "Whatever," he says, shaking his head. "Your go." He quickly shoves another chip in his mouth and grins at me. "Why did your parents divorce?" He gives me a tight-lipped smile and drums his fingers lightly on the table, then shrugs his shoulders. "I guess it was time for them to," he says indifferently. "It was time?" I ask, confused by his vague answer. "Is there an expiration date on marriages nowadays?" He shrugs. "For some people, yes." I'm interested in his thought process now. I'm hoping he doesn't move on to his turn now that my question has been asked, because I really want to know his views on this. Not that I'm planning on getting married anytime soon, but he is the guy I'm in love with. So it wouldn't hurt to know his stance, so I'm not as shocked years down the road. "Why do you think their marriage had a time limit?" I ask. "All marriages have a time limit if you enter them for the wrong reasons. Marriage doesn't get easier. It only gets harder. If you marry someone hoping it will improve things, you might as well set your timer the second you say I do.
What wrong reasons did they have to get married?
Me and Les, he says flatly. They knew each other less than a month when my mother got pregnant. My dad married her, thinking it was the right thing to do, when maybe the right thing to do was to never knock her up in the first place.
Accidents happen, I say.
I know, which is why they're now divorced.
I shake my head, sad that he's so casual about his parents' lack of love for each other. I guess it's been 8 years, though. The 10-year-old Holder may not have been so casual about the divorce as it was actually occurring.
But you don't think divorce is inevitable for every marriage?
He folds his arms across the table and leans forward, narrowing his eyes.
Sky, if you're wondering if I have commitment issues, the answer is no. Someday in the far, far, far away future, like post-college future, when I propose to you, which I will be doing one day because you aren't getting rid of me, I won't be marrying you with the hope that our marriage will work out. When you become mine, it'll be a forever thing. I've told you before that the only thing that matters to me with you are the forevers, and I mean that.
I smile at him, somehow a little bit more in love with him than I was 30 seconds ago.
Wow, you didn't need much time to think those words out.
He shakes his head.
That's because I've been thinking about forever with you since the second I saw you in the grocery store.
Our food couldn't have arrived at a more perfect time, because I have no idea how to respond to that. I pick up my fork to take a bite, but he reaches across the table and snatches it out of my hand.
No cheating, he says. We're not finished, and I'm about to get really personal with my question.
He takes a bite of his food and chews it slowly as I wait for him to ask me his really personal question. After he takes a drink, he takes another bite of food and grins at me, purposefully dragging out his turn so he can eat.
Ask me a damn question, I say with feigned irritation.
He laughs and wipes his mouth with his napkin, then leans forward.
Are you on birth control? He asks in a hushed voice.
His question makes me laugh, because it really isn't all that personal when you're asking the girl you're having sex with.
No, I'm not, I admit. I never really had a reason to be on it before you came barging into my life. Well, I want you on it, he says decisively. Make an appointment this week.
I balk at his rudeness.
You could ask me a little more politely, you know.
He arches an eyebrow as he takes a sip of his drink, then places it calmly back down on the table in front of him.
My bad.
He smiles and flashes his dimples at me.
Let me rephrase my words then, he says, lowering his voice to a husky whisper. I plan on making love to you, Sky. A lot. Pretty much any chance we get, because I rather enjoyed you this weekend, despite the circumstances surrounding it all. So in order for me to continue to make love to you, I would very much appreciate it if you would make alternative contraceptive arrangements so that we don't find ourselves in a pregnancy-induced marriage with an expiration date on it. Do you think you could do that for me? So that we can continue to have lots and lots and lots of sex.
I keep my eyes locked on his as I slide my empty glass to the waitress, who is now staring at Holder with her jaw wide open. I keep a straight face when I reply,
"That's much better," I say. "And yes, I believe I can arrange that."
He nods once, then slides his glass next to mine, glancing up at the waitress. She finally snaps out of her trance and quickly refills our glasses, then walks away. As soon as she's gone, I glare at Holder and shake my head.
You're evil, Dean Holder. I laugh.
What? He says innocently.
It should be illegal for the words make love and sex to flow past your lips when in the presence of any female besides the one who actually gets to experience you. I don't think you realize what you do to women. He shakes his head and attempts to brush off my comment. I'm serious, Holder. Without trying to explode your ego, you should know that you're incredibly appealing to pretty much any female with a pulse. I mean, think about it. I can't even count the number of guys I've met in my life, yet somehow you're the only one I've ever been attracted to. Explain that one. He laughs. That's an easy one, babe. How so? Because, he says, looking at me pointedly, you already loved me before you saw me in the grocery store that day. Just because you blocked the memory of me out of your mind doesn't mean you blocked the memory of me out of your heart. He brings a forkful of food to his mouth, but pauses before he takes a bite. Maybe you're right, though. It could have just been the fact that you wanted to lick my dimples, he says, shoving the forkful into his mouth. It was definitely the dimples, I say, smiling. I can't count the number of times he's made me smile in the half hour we've been here, and I've somehow eaten half of the food on my plate. His presence alone works wonders for a wounded soul. Tuesday, October 30th, 2012, 7:20 p.m. We're a block from Karen's house when I ask him to pull over. The anticipation during the drive over here was torture enough, but actually arriving is absolutely terrifying. I have no idea what to say to her or how I'm supposed to react when I walk through the front door. Holder pulls over to the side of the road and puts the car in park. He looks over at me with concern in his eyes. You need a chapter break? He asks. I nod, inhaling a deep breath. He reaches across the seat and grabs my hand. What is it that scares you the most about seeing her? I shift in my seat to face him. I'm scared that no matter what she says to me today, I'll never be able to forgive her. I know that my life turned out better with her than it would have if I had stayed with my father, but she had no way of knowing that when she stole me from him. The fact that I know what she's capable of makes it impossible for me to forgive her. If I couldn't forgive my father for what he did to me, then I feel like I shouldn't forgive her either. He brushes his thumb across the top of my hand. Maybe you'll never forgive her for what she did, but you can appreciate the life she gave you after she did it. She's been a good mom to you, Sky. Remember that when you talk to her today, okay? I expel a nervous breath. That's the part I can't get over, I say. The fact that she has been a good mom and I love her for it. I love her so much and I'm scared to death that after today, I won't have her anymore. Holder pulls me to him and hugs me. I'm scared for you too, babe, he says. Unwilling to pretend everything will be okay when it can't. It's the fear of the unknown that we're both wrapped up in. Neither of us has any idea which path my life will take after I walk through that front door, and if it's a path we'll even be able to take together. I pull apart from him and place my hands on my knees, working up courage to get this over with. I'm ready, I say. He nods, then pulls his car back onto the road and rounds the corner, coming to a stop in my driveway. Seeing my home causes my hands to tremble even more than they were before. Holder opens the driver's side door when Jack walks outside and he turns to face me. Stay here, he says. I want to talk to Jack first. Holder gets out of the car and shuts the door behind him. I stay put like he asked me to because I'm honestly in no hurry to get out of this car. I watch as Holder and Jack speak for several minutes. The fact that Jack is here, still supporting her, makes me wonder if Karen actually told him the truth about what she did. I doubt he would be here if he knew the truth. Holder walks back to the car, this time to the passenger door where I'm seated. He opens the door and kneels down next to me. He brushes his hand across my cheek and strokes my face with the back of his fingertips. "Are you ready?" he asks. I feel my head nodding, but I don't feel in control of the movement. I see my feet stepping out of the car and my hand reaching into Holder's, but I don't know how I'm moving when I'm consciously trying to keep myself seated in the car. I'm not ready to go in, but I'm walking away from the car in Holder's arms toward the house anyway. When I reach Jack, he reaches out to hug me. As soon as his familiar arms wrap around me, I catch back up to myself and take a deep breath. "Thank you for coming back," he says. "She needs this chance to explain everything. Promise me you'll give that to her." I pull away from him and look him in the eyes. "Do you know what she did, Jack? Did she tell you?" He nods painfully. "I know, and I know it's hard for you, but you need to let her tell you her side." He turns toward the house and keeps his arm around my shoulders. Holder takes my hand, and they both walk me to the front door like I'm a fragile child. I'm not a fragile child. I pause on the steps and turn to face them. I need to talk to her alone. I know I thought I wanted Holder with me, but I need to be strong for myself. I love the way he protects me, but this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do, and I want to be able to say I did it myself. If I can face this on my own, I know I'll have the courage to face anything. Neither of them objects, which fills me with appreciation for them, knowing they both have faith in me. Holder squeezes my hand and urges me forward with confidence in his eyes. "I'll be right here," he says. I take a deep breath, then open the front door. I step into the living room, and Karen stops pacing the floor and spins around, taking in the sight of me. As soon as we make eye contact, she loses control and rushes toward me. I don't know what look I expected to see on her face when I walked through this door, but it certainly wasn't a look of relief. "You're okay," she says, throwing her arms around my neck. She presses her hand to the back of my head and pulls me against her as she cries. "I'm so sorry, Sky. I'm so sorry you found out before I could tell you." She's trying hard to speak, but the sobs have taken over full force. Seeing her in this much pain tears at my heart. Knowing she's been lying to me doesn't immediately refute the 13 years I've loved her, so seeing her in pain only causes me pain in return. She takes my face in her hands and looks me in the eyes. "I swear to you, I was going to tell you everything the moment you turned 18. I hate that you had to find it all out on your own. I did everything I could to prevent that from happening." I grab her hands and remove them from my face, then step around her. "I have no idea how to respond to anything you're saying right now, Mom." I spin around and look her in the eyes. "I have so many questions, but I'm too scared to ask them. If you answer them, how do I know you'll be telling me the truth? How do I know you won't lie to me like you've been lying to me for the last 13 years? Karen walks to the kitchen and picks up a napkin to wipe her eyes. She inhales a few shaky breaths, attempting to regain control of herself. "Come sit with me, sweetie," she says, walking past me toward the couch. I remain standing while I watch her take a seat on the edge of the cushion. She glances up at me, her entire face awash with heartache. "Please," she says. "I know you don't trust me, and you have every right not to trust me for what I did. But if you can find it in your heart to recognize the fact that I love you more than life itself, you'll give me this chance to explain." Her eyes speak nothing but truth. For that, I walk to the couch and take a seat across from her. She takes a deep breath, then exhales, controlling herself long enough to begin with her explanation. In order for me to explain the truth about what happened with you, I first need to explain the truth about what happened to me. She pauses for a few minutes, attempting not to break down again. I can see in her eyes that whatever she's about to say is almost unbearable for her. I want to go to her and hug her, but I can't. As much as I love her, I just can't console her. I had a wonderful mom, Sky. You would have loved her so much. Her name was Dawn, and she loved my brother and me with everything she had. My brother John was 10 years older than me, so we never had to experience the sibling rivalry growing up. My father passed away when I was 9, so John was like the father figure in my life rather than a sibling. He was my protector. He was such a good brother, and she was such a good mother. Unfortunately, when I turned 13, the fact that John was like a father to me became his reality the day my mother died. John was only 23 and was fresh out of college at the time. I didn't have any other family willing to take me in, so he did what he had to do. At first things were okay. I missed my mother more than I should have. And to be honest, John was having a hard time dealing with everything laid out in front of him. He had just started his new job, fresh out of college, and things were tough for him, for both of us. By the time I turned 14, the stressors of his new job were really getting to him at this point. He began drinking, and I began rebelling, staying out later than I should have on several occasions. One night, when I came home, he was so angry with me. Our argument soon turned into a physical fight, and he hit me several times. He had never physically hurt me before, and it terrified me. I ran to my room, and he came in several minutes later to apologize. His behavior the previous few months as a result of his alcohol abuse already had me scared of him. Now, coupled with the fact that it had caused him to physically hurt me, I was terrified of him. Karen shifts in her seat and reaches down to sip from a glass of water. I watch her hand as she brings the glass to her mouth, and her fingers are trembling. He tried to apologize, but I refused to listen. My stubbornness pissed him off even more, so he pushed me back on the bed and started screaming at me. He went on and on, telling me that I had ruined his life. He said I needed to be thanking him for everything he was doing for me, that I owed him for having to work so hard to take care of me. Karen clears her throat, and new tears form in her eyes as she struggles to continue with the painful truth of her past. She brings her eyes to meet mine, and I can tell that the words on the tip of her tongue are almost too hard for her to release. "Sky," she says achingly. "My brother raped me that night. Not only did he do it that night, but it continued almost every night after that for 2 solid years. I bring my hands to my mouth and gasp. The blood rushes from my head, but it feels as though it rushes from the rest of my body as well. I feel completely empty hearing her words, because I'm terrified to hear what I think she's about to tell me. The look in her eyes is even emptier than how I'm feeling right now. Rather than wait for her to tell me, I just come out and ask her. "Mom, is John..." "He was my father, wasn't he?" She quickly nods her head as tears drop from her eyes. "Yes, sweetie, he was. I'm so sorry." My whole body jerks with the sob that breaks free, and Karen's arms are around me as soon as the first tears escape my eyes. I throw my arms around her and grasp her shirt. "I'm so sorry he did that to you," I cry. Karen sits next to me on the couch, and we hold each other while we cry over the things that were done to us at the hands of a man we both loved with all of our heart.
There's more, she says. I want to tell you everything, okay?
I nod as she pulls herself away from me and takes my hands in hers. When I turned 16, I told a friend of mine what he was doing to me. She told her mother, who then reported it. By that time, John had been in the police force for 3 years and was making a name for himself. When he was questioned about the report, he claimed I was making it up because he wouldn't allow me to see my boyfriend. He was eventually cleared, and the case was dismissed, but I knew I could never go back to live with him. I lived with a few friends until I graduated high school 2 years later. I never spoke to him again. 6 years had passed before I saw him again. I was 21 and in college by that time. I was at a grocery store and was on the next aisle when I heard his voice. I froze, unable to breathe, as I listened to his conversation. I would have been able to recognize his voice anywhere. There's something about a voice that terrifies you, that you'll never be able to forget, no matter what. But that day, it wasn't his voice that had me paralyzed. It was yours. I heard him talking to a little girl, and I was immediately taken back to all those nights he hurt me. I was sick to my stomach, knowing what he was capable of. I followed at a distance, watching the two of you interact. He walked a few feet away from the shopping cart at one point, and I caught your eye. You looked at me for a long time, and you were the most beautiful little girl I'd ever seen. But you were also the most broken little girl I'd ever seen. I knew the second I looked into your eyes that he was doing to you exactly what he had done to me. I could see the hopelessness and fear in your eyes when you looked back at me. I spent the next several days attempting to find out everything I could about you and your relationship to him. I learned about what happened to your mother and that he was raising you alone. I finally got the courage to phone in an anonymous report, hoping he would finally get what he deserved. I learned a week later that after interviewing you, the case was immediately dismissed by Child Protective Services. I'm not sure if the fact that he was the high up in law enforcement had anything to do with the dismissal, but I'm almost positive it did. Regardless, that was twice that he had gotten away with it. I couldn't bear the thought of allowing you to stay with him, knowing what was happening to you. I'm sure there were other ways I could have handled it, but I was young and scared to death for you. I didn't know what else to do because the law had already failed us both. A few days later, I had made up my mind. If no one else was going to help you get away from him, then I was. The day when I pulled up to your house, I'll never forget that broken little girl crying into her arms, sitting alone in the grass. When I called your name and you came to me, then climbed into the car with me, we drove away and I never looked back. Karen squeezes my hands between hers and looks at me hard. Sky, I swear with all of my heart that all I ever wanted to do was protect you from him. I did everything I could to keep him from finding you, to keep you from finding him. We never spoke about him again, and I did my best to help you move past what happened to you so you could have a normal life. I knew that I couldn't get away with hiding you forever. I knew there would come a day that I would have to face what I did. But none of that mattered to me. None of that matters to me still. I just wanted you safe until you were old enough so that you would never be sent back to him. The day before I took you, I went to your house and no one was there. I went inside because I wanted to find some things that might comfort you once you were safe with me. Something like a favorite blanket or a teddy bear. Once I was actually inside your bedroom, I realized that anything in that house couldn't possibly bring you comfort. If you were anything like me, everything that had a connection to him
reminded you of what he had done to you. So I didn't take anything, because I didn't want you to remember what he had done to you. She stands up and quietly walks out of the room, then returns moments later with a small wooden box. She places it in my hands. I couldn't leave without these. I knew that when the day came for me to tell you the truth, that you would want to know all about your mother, too. I couldn't find much, but what I did find, I kept for you. Tears fill my eyes as I run my fingers over the wooden box that holds the only memories of a woman I never thought I would have a chance to remember. I don't open it. I can't. I need to open it alone. Karen tucks my hair behind my ear, and I look back up at her. I know what I did was wrong, but I don't regret it. If I had to do it again just to know you would be safe, I wouldn't think twice about it. I also know that you probably hate me for lying to you. I'm okay with that, Skye, because I love you enough for the both of us. Never feel guilty for how you feel about what I've done to you. I've had this conversation and this moment planned out for 13 years, so I'm prepared for whatever you decide to do, and whatever decision you make. I want you to do what's best for you. I'll call the police right now if that's what you want me to do. I'll be more than willing to tell them everything I just told you if it would help you find peace. If you need me to wait until your actual 18th birthday so you can continue to live in this house until then, I will. I'll turn myself in the second you're legally allowed to take care of yourself, and I'll never question your request. But whatever you choose, Skye, whatever you decide to do, don't worry about me. Knowing you're safe now is everything I could ever ask for. Whatever comes next for me is worth every second of the 13 years I've had with you. I look back down at the box and continue to cry, not having a clue as to what to do. I don't know what's right or what's wrong, or if right is wrong in this situation. I know that I can't answer her right now. I feel like with everything she's just told me, all that I thought I knew about justice and fairness has just slapped me in the face. I look back up at her and shake my head. I don't know, I whisper. I don't know what I want to happen. I don't know what I want, but I know what I need. I need a chapter break. I stand up and she remains seated, watching me as I walk to the door. I can't look her in the eyes as I open the front door. I need to think for a while, I say quietly, making my way outside. As soon as the front door closes behind me, Holder's arms wrap around me. I cradle the wooden box in one hand and wrap my other arm around his neck, burying my head into his shoulder. I cry into his shirt, not knowing how to begin processing everything I've just learned. The sky, I say. I need to look at the sky. He doesn't ask any questions. He knows exactly what I'm referring to. So he grabs my hand and leads me to the car. Jack slips back inside the house as Holder and I pull out of the driveway. Tuesday, October 30th, 2012. 8:45 p.m. Holder never asks me what Karen said while I was inside the house with her. He knows that I'll tell him when I can, but right now, in this moment, I don't think I can. Not until I know what I want to do. He pulls the car over when we get to the airport, but pulls up significantly further than where we normally park. When we walk down to the fence, I'm surprised to see an unlocked gate. Holder lifts the latch and swings it open, motioning for me to walk through. There's a gate? I ask, confused. Why do we always climb the fence? He shoots me a sly grin. You were in a dress the 2 times we've been here. Where's the fun in walking through a gate? Somehow, and I don't know how,
I find it in me to laugh. I walk through the gate, and he closes it behind me, but remains on the other side of it. I pause and reach my hand out to him. "I want you to come with me," I say.
"Are you sure? I figured you'd want to think alone tonight."
I shake my head. "I like being next to you out here. It wouldn't feel right if I was alone." He opens the gate and takes my hand in his. We walk down to the runway and claim our usual spots under the stars. I lay the wooden box next to me, still not sure that I have the courage to open it. I'm not really sure of anything right now. I lay still for over half an hour, silently thinking about my life, about Karen's life, about Leslie's life, and I feel like the decision I'm having to make needs to be one for all three of us.
"Karen is my aunt," I say aloud. "My biological aunt."
I don't know if I'm saying it out loud for Holder's benefit, or if I just want to say it out loud for myself. Holder wraps his pinky around mine and turns his head to look at me.
"Your dad's sister?"
he asks hesitantly. I nod, and he closes his eyes, understanding what that means for Karen's past.
"That's why she took you,"
he says knowingly. He says it like it makes complete sense.
"She knew what he was doing to you."
I confirm his statement with a nod. "She wants me to decide, Holder. She wants me to choose what happens next. The problem is, I don't know what choice is the right one." He takes my entire hand in his now, intertwining our fingers.
"That's because none of them are the right choice," he says. "Sometimes you have to choose between a bunch of wrong choices and no right ones. You just have to choose which wrong choice feels the least wrong."
Making Karen pay for something she did out of complete selflessness is without a doubt the worst wrong choice. I know it in my heart, but it's still a struggle to accept that what she did is something that should have no consequences. I know she didn't know it at the time, but the fact that Karen took me away from my father only led to what happened to Leslie. It's hard to ignore that Karen taking me indirectly led to what happened to my best friend. To the only other girl in Holder's life that he feels he let down. "I need to ask you something," I say to him. He silently waits for me to speak, so I sit up and look down at him. "I don't want you to interrupt me, okay? Just let me get this out." He touches my hand and nods, so I continue. "I know that Karen did what she did because she was only trying to save me. The decision she made was made out of love, not hate. But I'm scared that if I don't say anything, if we keep it to ourselves, that it will affect you. Because I know that what my father did to Les was only done because I wasn't there, taking her place. And I know there was no way Karen could have foreseen what he would do. I know she tried to do the right thing by reporting him before she became so desperate. But what happens to us, to you and me, when we try to go back to how things were before? I'm scared you'll hate Karen forever, or that you'll eventually begin to resent me for whatever choice I make tonight. And I'm not saying I don't want you to feel whatever it is you need to feel. If you need to hate Karen for what happened to Les, I understand. I guess I just need to know that whatever I choose, I need to know. I attempt to find the most eloquent way to say it, but I can't. Sometimes the most simplistic questions are the hardest to ask. I squeeze his hand and look him in the eyes. "Holder, will you be okay?" His expression is unreadable as he watches me. He laces his fingers through mine and turns his attention back to the sky above us.
"All this time," he says quietly, "for the past year I've done nothing but hate and resent Les for what she did. I hated her because we led the exact same life.
We had the exact same parents who went through the exact same divorce. We had the exact same best friend who was ripped from our lives. We shared the exact same grief over what happened to you, Sky. We moved to the same town in the same house with the same mom and the same school. The things that happened in her life were the exact same things that happened in mine. But she always took it so much harder. Sometimes at night I would hear her crying. I would always go lay with her and hold her, but there were so many times I just wanted to scream at her for being so much weaker than me. Then that night, when I found out what she did, I hated her. I hated her for giving up so easily. I hated that she thought her life was so much harder than mine when they were the exact same. He sits up and turns to face me, taking both of my hands in his. I know the truth now. I know that her life was a million times harder than mine. And the fact that she still smiled and laughed every single day, but I never had a single clue what kind of shit she had been through, I finally see how brave she really was. And it wasn't her fault that she didn't know how to deal with it all. I wish that she would have asked for help or told someone what happened, but everyone deals with these things differently, especially when you think you're all alone. You were able to block it out, and that's how you coped. I think she tried to do that, but she was a lot older when it happened to her, so it made it impossible. Instead of blocking it out and never thinking about it again, I know she did the exact opposite. I know that it consumed every part of her life until she just couldn't take it anymore. And you can't say that Karen's choice had any direct link to what your father did to Les. If Karen had never taken you away from him, he more than likely would have still done those things to Les, whether you were there or not. It's who he was. It's what he did. So if you're asking me if I blame Karen, the answer is no. The only thing I wish Karen would have done differently is I wish she could have taken Les, too. He wraps his arms around me and brings his mouth to my ear. Whatever you decide, whatever you feel will make your heart heal faster, that's what I want for you. That's what Les wants for you too. I hug him back and bury my head against his shoulder. Thank you, Holder. He holds me silently while I think about the decision that isn't even much of a decision anymore. After a while, I pull away from him and lift the box into my lap. I run my fingers across the top of it and hesitate before touching the latch. I press on it and slowly lift the lid as I close my eyes, hesitant to see what's inside of it. I take a deep breath once the lid is lifted, then I open my eyes and peer down into the eyes of my mother. I pick the picture up between my trembling fingers, looking at a woman who could be no one else but the person who created me. From my mouth, to my eyes, to my cheekbones, I'm her. Every part of me is her. I set the picture down and pick up the one beneath it. This one causes even more emotions to resurface, because it's a picture of both of us. I can't be older than 2, and I'm sitting in her lap with my arms wrapped around her neck. She's kissing me on the cheek, and I'm staring at the camera with a smile bigger than life. Tears fall onto the picture in my hands, so I wipe them off and place the pictures in Holder's hands. I need for him to see what I so desperately had to go back to my father's house for. There's one more item in the box. I pick it up and lace the necklace through my fingers. It's a silver locket in the shape of a star. I snap it open and look at the picture of myself as an infant. Inscribed inside the locket on the side opposite the photo, it says, "My ray of hope." I unclasp the necklace and bring it to the back of my neck, Holder reaches up and takes both clasps while I pull my hair up. He fastens it, and I let my hair down. Then he kisses the side of my head.
She's beautiful. Just like her daughter.
He hands the pictures back to me and kisses me gently. He looks down at my locket and opens it, then stares at it for several moments, smiling. He snaps it shut and looks back into my eyes.
Are you ready?
I place the pictures back inside the box and shut the lid, then look back up at him confidently and nod. I am. Tuesday, October 30th, 2012, 10:15 p.m. Holder walks inside with me this time. Karen and Jack are on the couch and he has his arm around her, holding her hand. She looks up at me once I walk through the door and Jack stands up, preparing to give us privacy once again.
It's okay, I say to him. You don't have to leave. This won't take long.
My words concern him, but he doesn't say anything in response. He walks a few feet away from Karen so that I can sit next to her on the couch. I place the box on the table in front of her, then take my seat. I turn toward her, knowing that she has no idea what her future holds for her. Despite the fact that she has no idea what choice I've made and what's going to happen to her, she still smiles at me reassuringly. She wants me to know that she's okay with whatever I chose. I take her hands in mine and I look her directly in the eyes. I want her to feel and believe what I'm about to say to her because I don't want there to be anything but truth between us.
Mom, I say, regarding her with as much confidence as I can. When you took me from my father, you knew the potential consequences of your decision, but you did it anyway. You risked your entire life just to save mine, and I could never ask for you to suffer because of that choice. Giving up your life for me is more than I could ever ask of you. I'm not about to judge you for what you did. The only appropriate thing for me to do at this point is to thank you. So, thank you. Thank you so much for saving my life, Mom. Her tears are now falling even harder than my own. We wrap our arms around each other, and we cry. We cry mother to daughter. We cry aunt to niece. We cry victim to victim. We cry survivor to survivor. I can't begin to imagine the life that Karen has led the past 13 years. Every choice she made was for my benefit alone. She had assumed once I turned 18 that she would confess what she did and would turn herself in to face the consequences. Knowing that she loves me enough that she would be willing to give her whole life up for me almost makes me feel unworthy now that I know that two people in this world love me in that way. It's almost too much to accept. It turns out Karen really does want to take the next step with Jack, but she was hesitant because she knew she would break his heart once he found out the truth. What she wasn't expecting is that Jack loves her unconditionally, the same way she loves me. Hearing her confess her past and the choices she had to make only made him more certain about his love for her. I'm guessing that his things will be completely moved in by next weekend. Karen spends the evening patiently answering all of my questions. My main question was that I didn't understand how I could have a legal name and the documents to back it up. Karen laughed at that question and explained that with enough money and the right connections, I was conveniently adopted from out of the country and obtained my citizenship when I was 7. I don't even ask her for the details because I'm scared to know. Another question I needed the answer to was the most obvious one.
Could we get a TV now? Turns out she doesn't despise technology nearly as much as she had to let on over the years. I have a feeling we'll be doing some shopping in the electronics department tomorrow. Holder and I explained to Karen how he came to find out who I was. At first, she couldn't understand how we could have had such a strong connection at that young of an age, strong enough for him to remember me. But after seeing us interact for a while longer, I think she's convinced that our connection is real now. Unfortunately, I can also see the concern in her eyes every time he leans in to kiss me or puts his hand on my leg. She is, after all, my mother. After several hours pass and we've all reached the most peaceful point we can possibly reach after the weekend we've had, we call it a night. Holder and Jack tell us both goodbye, and Holder assures Karen that he'll never again send me another ego-deflating text. He winks at me over his shoulder when he says it, though. Karen hugs me more than I've ever been hugged in a single day. After her final hug for the night, I go to my room and crawl into my bed. I pull the covers up over me and lock my hands together behind my head, looking up at the stars on my ceiling. I contemplated tearing them down, thinking they would only serve to bring about more negative memories. I didn't remove them, though. I'm leaving them, because now when I look at them, they remind me of hope. They remind me of me and everything I've had to overcome to get to this point in my life. And while I could sit here and feel sorry for myself, wondering why all of this happened to me, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to wish for a perfect life. The things that knock you down in life are tests, forcing you to make a choice between giving in and remaining on the ground, or wiping the dirt off and standing up even taller than you did before you were knocked down. I'm choosing to stand up taller. I'll probably get knocked down a few more times before this life is through with me, but I can guarantee you I'll never stay on the ground. There's a light tap on my bedroom window right before it rises up. I smile and scoot over to my side of the bed, waiting for him to join me. I don't get a greeting at the window tonight, he says in a hushed voice, lowering the window behind him. He walks to his side of my bed and lifts the covers, then scoots in beside me. You're freezing, I say, snuggling into his arms. Did you walk here? He shakes his head and squeezes me, then kisses my forehead. No, I ran here. He slides one of his hands down to my butt. It's been over a week since either of us has exercised. Your ass is starting to get really huge. I laugh and hit him on the arm. Try to remember the insults are only funny in text form. Speaking of, does this mean you get your phone back? I shrug. I don't really want that phone back. I'm hoping my whipped boyfriend will get me an iPhone for Christmas. He laughs and rolls on top of me, meshing his ice-cold lips with mine. The contrasting temperatures of our mouths are enough to make him groan. He kisses me until his entire body is well above room temperature again. You know what? He pulls up on his elbows and peers down at me with his adorable, dimpled grin. What? His voice drops into that lyrical, godlike octave again. We've never had sex in your bed. I contemplate his thought for half a second, then shake my head and roll him onto his back. And it will remain that way, as long as my mother is down the hall. He laughs and grabs me by the waist and pulls me on top of him. I lay my head on his chest and he wraps his arms tightly around me. Sky, Holder, I mimic. I want you to know something, he says. And I'm not saying this as your boyfriend or even as your friend. I'm saying this because it needs to be said by someone. He stops stroking my arm, and he stills his hand on the center of my back.
I'm so proud of you.
I squeeze my eyes shut and swallow his words, sending them straight to my heart. He moves his lips to my hair and kisses me for either the first time or the 20th time or the millionth time, but who's counting? I hug him tighter and exhale. Thank you. I lift my head up and rest my chin on his chest, looking up at him while he smiles back at me. And it's not what you just said that I'm thanking you for, Holder. I need to thank you for everything. Thank you for giving me the courage to always ask the questions, even when I don't want the answers. Thank you for loving me like you love me. Thank you for showing me that we don't always have to be strong to be there for each other. That it's okay to be weak, so long as we're there. And thank you for finally finding me after all these years. I trail my fingers across his chest until they reach his arm. I run them across each letter of his tattoo, then lean forward and press my lips to it and kiss it. But mostly, thank you for losing me all those years ago, because my life wouldn't be the same if you would have never walked away. My body rises and falls against his huge intake of breath. He cups my face in his hands, and he attempts to smile, but it doesn't reach his pain-filled eyes. Out of all the times I imagined what it would be like if I ever found you, I never thought it would end with you thanking me for losing you. End? I ask, disliking the term he chose. I lift up and kiss him briefly on the lips, and pull back. I hope this isn't our end.
Hell no, this isn't our end, he says.
He tucks a stray lock of hair behind my ear and keeps his hand there.
And I wish I could say we were about to live happily ever after, but I can't. We both still have so much to work through, with everything that's happened between you, me, your mother, your dad, and what I know happened to Les. There will be days that I don't think we'll know how to survive. But we will. We will because we have each other. So I'm not worried about us, babe. I'm not worried about us at all.
I kiss him on his dimple and smile. I'm not worried about us either. And for the record, I don't believe in happily ever afters. He laughs.
Good, because you're not really getting one. All you're getting is me.
That's all I need, I say. Well, I need the lamp, and the ashtray, and the remote control, and the paddleball game, and you, Dean Holder. But that's all I need.
13 years earlier. What's he doing out there?
I ask Leslie, looking out the living room window at Dean. He's on his back in their driveway, looking up at the sky.
He's stargazing, she says. He does it all the time.
I turn around and look at her. What's stargazing? She shrugs her shoulders.
I don't know. That's just what he calls it when he stares at the sky for a long time.
I look out the window again and watch him for a little longer. I don't know what stargazing is, but it sounds like something I would like. I love the stars. I know my mom loved them too, because she put them all over my room. I want to do it, I say. Can we go do it too? I look back at her, but she's taking off her shoes.
I don't want to go. You can go, and I'll help my mom get our popcorn and movie ready.
I like the days I get to have sleepovers with Leslie. I like any days I don't have to be at home. I slide off the couch and walk to the front door to slip my shoes on, then walk outside and go lay next to Dean in the driveway. He doesn't even look at me when I sit down next to him. He just keeps looking up at the sky. So I do the same thing. The stars are really bright tonight. I've never looked up at them like this before. They're so much prettier than the stars on my ceiling.
It's so beautiful. I know, Hope, he says. I know.
It's quiet for a long time. I don't know if we watch the stars for lots of minutes or hours, but we keep watching them and we don't talk. Dean doesn't really talk a whole bunch. He's a lot quieter than Leslie.
Hope, will you promise me something?
I turn my head and look at him, but he's still looking up at the stars. I've never promised anyone anything before, except my daddy. I had to promise him I wouldn't tell anyone how he makes me thank him, and I haven't broken his promise, even though sometimes I wish I could. If I ever did break my daddy's promise, I would tell Dean, because I know he would never tell anyone.
Yes, I say to him.
He turns his head and looks at me, but his eyes look sad.
You know, sometimes when your daddy makes you cry.
I nod my head and try not to cry just thinking about it. I don't know how Dean knows that my daddy is always the reason why I'm crying, but he does.
Will you promise me that when he makes you sad, you'll think about the sky?
I don't know why he wants me to promise him that, but I nod anyway.
But why? Because.
He turns his face back up to the stars.
The sky is always beautiful. Even when it's dark or rainy or cloudy, it's still beautiful to look at. It's my favorite thing because I know if I ever get lost or lonely or scared, I just have to look up, and it'll be there no matter what. And I know it'll always be beautiful. It's what you can think about when your daddy is making you sad, so you don't have to think about him.
I smile, even though what we're talking about is making me sad.
I just keep looking up at the sky, like Dean is, thinking about what he said. It makes my heart feel happy to have somewhere to go now when I don't want to be where I am. Now, when I'm scared, I'll just think about the sky and maybe it'll help me smile because I know it'll always be beautiful no matter what.
Promise, I whisper.
Good, he says.
He reaches his hand out and wraps his pinky around mine.
This has been an Audible Inc. production of Hopeless, written by Colleen Hoover, narrated by Angela Gothels. Producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2012 by Colleen Hoover. Production copyright 2013 by Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.